All right, how's everyone doing? Welcome everyone to episode 95. We're getting closer, almost 100. I might just, we just talked about it actually, I might just do something special for 100. If you have good ideas, you know, throw my way. But yeah, 95 is quite a number. And in fact, it's such a high number, everyone on the podcast, and I think the last couple episodes, two has already been on before, and I think everyone has been on several times, for a good reason though. Obviously, I'm not gonna just invite people just to mix it up. I want to have the best people for the topic, which I think I managed to get. So today the plan is to talk about the faction warfare stuff. I mean, if you look at obviously, the CSM election just finished. Everyone here was in the election, and sadly, Ithaca and Hai missed by a few votes. You know, a little unlucky. And I think, man, just like tiny differences, tiny like slight decisions on like certain blocks and stuff like this could have made all the difference. You know, but the elections were just finished. The new CSM stuff this year, this term, is going to be very focused on faction warfare stuff. And I think it's very important that we give as good feedback as we can, like quality input. And not only from one perspective, right? There's going to be faction warfare players. Obviously, Arcia, the champion of faction warfare when it comes to like changes and stuff like this. Then we have Ithaca, who has been around for ages on a small scale level, on a mid scale level in Volta, but he's, I think, mostly known for his tournament involvement, commentary, and moderation, right? I think, especially moderation, you're doing a fantastic job there. I could never do this.
I mean, you're doing it right now.
Well, moderation of my own podcast is a different thing. Moderating people on stage for a tournament, that's a different ballgame, at least in my opinion. But maybe it's just preferences, who knows. And then obviously we have a high one to here, that are like, who I always like to invite because I think he has a unique point of view, being I guess the spiritual leader of Snuff, who are the biggest group in Nullsec, and everyone kind of fears them, tries to avoid them. Not everyone likes them. but I think it's very important to see all those perspectives, right? So, welcome everyone back. And how are you guys doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, I'm all right, Pando. For episode 100, I want you to get the judge, the Big X, and the Mitanni. Oof. That's what you're going to do.
Man, that would be an episode. 100. That would be a lot of game awards thrown around, I guess.
Be a good episode, though.
You know, I did invite Big X. That one time, you remember, at some point, Big X, there was like rumors he's coming back or something like... Oh no, there was some changes in terms of the ban mechanics or the ban rules, right? And then everyone was getting excited for like certain people that got banned, be it GigX or Stunt or like, I don't know. And some people were like, well, under these new rules or whatever, maybe GigX is kind of come back. So I actually poked him and said like, hey, you want to come on? But he declined, I guess. Maybe one day I'll get him on, yeah. Oh, it hurt a little bit. That's okay. But maybe, you know, one day. How long was he banned? Like, for life? I forgot, actually.
I assume for life, yeah.
I think it was a permanent ban, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure if a ban for life is ever the right thing. I mean, wouldn't be 10 years already be almost for life? I don't know. That may be something for a different episode. Today it's about... faction warfare. Not only faction warfare, I want to talk about, maybe, not only talk about, but speculate a little bit how, like, what they have in mind right now, then for sure throw in ideas like what they need to watch out for, right? I think that's especially where it comes to nullsec stuff, like nullsec players coming in, flooding the, exploiting the system, or snuffed, exploiting the snuffed out, right? Or, you know, some like holes in the whole theory or whatever. So giving good feedback there would be nice. And then, yeah, like I said, like I think it's going to be interesting to talk about the nullsec player. Like, is it attractive for nullsec players, perhaps, because they talked about it in the presentations. So my first question would be, I actually already asked that leading up to it. We were sitting around. I asked, like, are you guys hyped? All right. So are you guys hyped for Faction Warfare rework? Maybe we start with high, because I already know what Ithaca and Arcee are saying.
I would say that, to put it nicely, the more recent patches of the game have been slightly underwhelming, and even the ones where CCP have tried to kind of address the more core problems, for example, the Citadel patch, although there were changes in a good direction, they actually didn't change anything really in the game, because there are inherent issues that still would need aggressive fixes and actual changes to fix, rather than tweaking Citadel, so they kind of tune them down a bit, for example. So I guess it depends how they do it, because I can easily foresee CCP doing something they might think is great, but in actuality it doesn't actually gain any traction, doesn't attract people in the same way, and then things kind of effectively stay the same, or the opposite, where they do a thing that's completely overpowered and people make a lot of money, for example, for a long time, like the very, very, very old Citadel, well, Faction Warfare changes that was actually around for a while, and then they kind of just nerf it to shit, and then nothing really happens again. So I don't know. I'll have to see. I am a realist these days. CCP is. I've been positive before, and then I've been sad, so I'm holding my cards tight to my chest.
All right. What about Ithaca?
I'm not hyped yet, because I've not seen enough to get like super excited about it yet. I'm cautiously optimistic, I would say, but still reserved. I share kind of what Hai is saying. Like, there's a lot of disappointment over the last while that needs to be overcome, and that stands in the way of being hyped. Like, you know, 5-6 years ago, when they announced something like this, I'd probably been a lot more hyped. But at the moment, I'm just sort of like sitting back, like, I'll wait and see if they don't just screw it up. That's my main thing.
But why are you cautiously optimistic then, and not going the same direction as high? Like, what's the positive thing you think?
Because I said this a lot during some of the CSM campaign things. I've seen a bit of a change in TCP over the last like sort of 12, 18 months or so. And it feels like they're changing direction. The ship is turning. We're already starting to see things with the way that they're going away from quadrants back to expansions, devs being encouraged to play the game again openly, things like that. They're just being more engaged with the community now, I feel, than they have been for the last little while. And this is a good direction. It seems like they're hiring interesting people who have got good experience. They're getting people involved. There's a decent amount of knowledge in this subject on the CSM. And it just feels like they have all the pieces now that maybe they didn't have 2 years ago, and they've got the right attitude, more importantly, right now, which they didn't maybe have 2 years ago. They're still on the back foot because they've spent a couple of years kind of dicking everybody over, but it looks like they've acknowledged that, and they're moving towards actually, you know, building the game better now.
If the guy has to say he's optimistic over in his CCP job, he's next up for the CCP job after Cetonia, so has
that
to be careful
true.
With what he
that
says.
That is true. Yeah, for those who don't know, Ithaca came like, I don't even know how many, like a handful of votes short. That means, and statistically it happens pretty often, I don't know how often, maybe 20-25% of the times, someone drops out of the CSM and then the next one up replaces. That's what happened last time, and
Arcee
got on. Exactly.
So Ithaca is the new CSM 17 champion of the losers.
Yeah.
Like, I was the champion of the losers for CSM 16, and I became the ascended loser when Pro'Goth stepped down. So you can be an ascended loser too, Ithaca.
I look forward to hopefully being an ascended loser. For now, I will stick with my champion of the loser mantle, of course. if any CSM members are feeling just tired or like, you know what, it's not for you, then no judgment. Feel free to just step down. Not a problem.
I mean, I did think about that scenario before where it's like certain CSM members, maybe, let's say they have a certain thing they want to push. Let's just say Arcia wants to push just Faction Warfare. I'm just using you because you're so Faction Warfare focused.
Pando's going to send me on a snowboarding trip.
But then if the CCP would then say like, well, this is all done. We're not talking about this anymore. Or like, let's say high sake for someone or so. Maybe a CSM member would then say like, well, if that's not the case, then it's not worth my time. And then I might as well step down and give a room to another candidate. Who knows, right? We've not seen that before though, right? That would be weird.
I don't know why you think that way, because realistically people in the CSM should be of a high enough level of experience and to understand that most parts of the game, well, probably everything in the game is in-linked in some way, so that's things that happen theory, in high sec and low sec will still affect low sec, for example, so in some way.
I agree. Theory, I actually think this is the... There's less likely someone is going to stand down this CSM because there's so many new people. I think everyone's going to be enthusiastic and engaged, and this is actually going to be potentially one of the most productive CSMs for a long time because of that, rather than just the same bunch of spaceship nerds sitting in the same room year after year after year. It's new people, so they're going to be a bit more, it's going to be a bit different, it's going to be less experience, of course, but it's going to be a lot more enthusiasm, I think.
Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing, actually. So I wonder too, like, if this CSM is going to be like fresh, and then also CCP can approach them in a fresh way and not say like, oh, these guys again. Like, no, they're all new people, you know, besides Brisk and is it just
Brisk, Arcia and Kenneth?
Yeah. Yeah, Arcia was there for half a term, right? But yeah, so Brisk and Kenneth.
Slightly not new.
Yeah. But
slightly aged. Still not expired yet.
You're still fresh though. You're still full of energy.
I haven't curdled.
Yeah. So, Arcia then, are you hyped or what?
All right. So, I'm of two minds. There's definitely like a part of my brain that's like dumb fangirl Mark brain, where like, oh my God, they said faction warfare. I think I probably squealed during the FanFest announcement. But I am somebody who has also been burned after being excited in the past. So there's another part of my brain that's like, calm down, idiot. Be cautious. You can be optimistic, but don't explode in like hype. And like, honestly, like the reason I ran for CSM 17, I wouldn't have if there wasn't faction warfare changes announced at FanFest. I wouldn't have run. The reason I'm running is because I do care about it being done well, and I want to help it be done well. So,
yeah, and I think people could tell, and that's why you got elected.
So, yeah, I am cautiously optimistic, but there's definitely part of my brain that's just like having a like a party.
Yeah, that makes sense. Right? I mean, so to just like put my opinion in there too, like, my Faction Warfare experience is so old, like I don't want to say it even counts at this point because it's like so long ago, right? I do know the basic mechanics and all that stuff. But I think I'm kind of where Ithaca is, right? Cautiously optimistic. And main reason is CCP overall, to be honest, because I think she's coming in with a lot of energy and she has a lot of momentum going. And she was an active player, like, you know, I'm saying it because, like, you know, I guess there is someone at CCP saying, yeah, I play the game, but it's like, do you play the game or do you, like, what are you doing in the game? Like, it's like exploring or like, what are you doing, right? So it's like, I know she has some deeper knowledge than just like some high sec mining or so, right? So
if you look at like the faction warfare panel round table that wasn't round at FanFest, a lot of the devs who were there were, you could tell by their answers and by how they talked about stuff, they were passionate. It was Aurora, it was Delegate Zero, there's a handful of other people. And I was convinced by like their answers that they like really did give a shit about what they were talking about.
All right. So then it comes to the question, let's dive into this, right? So what is their exact plan? Maybe Asya, you probably are the most aware of the details. So what is the exact plan, and what do you think, what do you think of the basic idea of the rework? Right, and like, I'm just gonna show, yeah. I guess I've got some pictures or some from the slides, right? So those were the design goals, right?
The FanFest. Yeah. The stuff from FanFest seemed to point in a direction where, like, you have, instead of declaring as an alliance or a corp or whatever your highest unit of organization is, you can declare individual allegiance. The system's going to be a little bit different. Hopefully these changes that weren't really talked about in specifics at FanFest can help subdue any abuse of this is like, that's going to be one of the important things. Like the individual enlistment, if it's not handled well, could open itself to a lot of abuse. So while it has a lot of potential to bring in more players into the war zone, and something the two war zones desperately need is more players, especially in later time zones like late US and Australian time zones. But
yeah, so I guess
that part being done well is going to be important.
So I guess the main differences to the current system is the first of all, the dynamic frontline system, which I'll show in a second from those slides. And then obviously, like you said, the allegiance thing, right? Because before you had to join a corp that's in Faction Warfare and stuff like this, right? And now you can just say, like, I'm a player on my own, I'm in a corp in Nullsec, whatever, but I declare allegiance to whatever, Galanti. And that opens up Faction Warfare to just so many more players, right?
And I think perhaps most importantly, they talked a lot about having a system which rewards allegiance and loyalty over time, as opposed to right now, Faction Warfare is working off of a tier system that encourages flip-flopping back and forth between the sides, manipulating LP and taking advantage of one side or another when it's in a high tier to get more LP with little to no repercussion when you flip back and forth.
Yeah. All right, let me...
I think that's probably one of the most important things, to be honest, because it makes it engaging for everyone involved, not just the people who decide to be engaged by it. Like, the way it was currently is you had to basically decide, hey, I don't really care about making money or anything. I just care about the faction war itself, and that's why I'm engaged with it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, like, a subset of players, and a lot of players care about just farming it to make money, which is what pushes it back and forward, back and forward.
Yeah.
So you have a situation where players who want to be involved in faction warfare are getting almost penalized for doing it properly instead of just abusing the system. So now, if it's done right, players who engage with the system as it's sort of intended and actually contribute to the war itself and the content and being in space are going to be able to reap the rewards from that. And that will be really good to, you know, point people towards faction warfare as newer players and say, hey, go PvP over there, instead of, hey, if you want money, go farm over there.
And perhaps one of the most egregious points of those farmers is after they flip-flop the war zone back and forth, a lot of what they do is run missions which don't contribute to the PvP ecosystem of the area. The highest LP earning activity is the level 4 missions, which you tend to do in fast aligning snipey ships like Jackdaws. And you don't interact with other people. You run if something comes. The NPCs that should be your friends actively shoot you.
I mean,
like, that's always the case with that system.
There's so many ishtas.
As it stands.
So many ishtas that are tackled, and then I'm like basically like, saving the NPCs' lives, and then they switch on me.
My hope is that the announced battleground sites can kind of push the missions out as the premier moneymaker, whereas like the core plexing and system control mechanics, which are quite good, can just be refined, hopefully. I hope that what they announced at FanFest, the battleground sites, which are going to be more... What they said at FanFest was kind of like something in the vein of... Or what they hinted at was something in the vein of like flashpoints, like PvE that you have to fit to assume that you're going to get PvP'd. Like the kind of like hybrid activity that should be a 10 to 15 person fleet size thing that gets a has a high value objective and people will fight over it.
So the like one key thing what they announced, which I have on the screen right now, is the whole frontlines thing, right? And then maybe High's input would be interesting here, because one thing that always comes up is like, okay, you have these frontline systems, right, that are next to each other, then you have the command operations behind that, and then after that all the other systems are rear guard. So now what they said is that the frontline systems, they give incentive by like bigger payouts and stuff for people to actually do the PvE stuff there, right, or the PvE VP, you know, whatever you want to call it. Like the
the battlegrounds only spawn in them, so like they won't even be in
certain plexes or whatever only spawn in frontline systems, right? So so there's an incentive to do it there, and then it's very Potchvenish in terms of like number kept, so you have another incentive to just go to a certain fleet size, right?
That's important point to make is that it's a soft cap. So you can actually enter as many people in
Yes.
things. It's not like those sites that have like a max of like.
But it wouldn't be worth your time, ISK-wise.
Yeah, exactly. So, but it would be worth your time to go in there and kill them, is the thing. That, so like more ships being able to get in is important for that.
Yeah. So, but at the same time, if you compare it to Parchment, Parchment is not as accessible as faction warfare, really, right? And that's where also High comes in, because if I show up there, let's say it's capped at 15, just the LP payout, I've got a fleet of 15 and I want to be very efficient, so I take out some shiny toys, let's say I'm gonna go there with a Leshak fleet or whatever to do these then you know Snuffed might be staging in direct Titan range, you know, I guess Snuff would be, or like bigger groups, right? I'm just saying Snuff because High is here. They would have a great list of targets suddenly, you know, they could just like, you know, dunk on. So one thing that always comes up is like, should these systems, front lines and command operations be Sino-gemmed? So what's your take on that, High? Is High even here or did he run off? What happened to High?
He must have gone in the AFK.
What?
I went by.
All right. I don't know what happened to High, but his...
I'll answer for him.
All right.
As the official representative of Snuffed Out, I think that it would be very interesting, and I would actually like to see it, that those systems are, for example, Sino-jammed. Because you can still get capped in through gates if you really care. Like, it's not as if it's like Poshfin where it's completely and utterly cut off. Having it Sino-jammed would change the geography of the land, like, of the cluster, essentially, so, for a temporary period of time. And I think that would be super interesting. I said to CCP Aurora after she announced at FanFest, I was like, hey, it'd be pretty cool if there was like a fourth type of system, which is like a blockaded system where maybe your faction can like donate LP or some other random mechanic, and you have maybe one or two blockaded systems per war zone, and it shuts down like a gate link between two systems, so you can like change the geography of the game temporarily. They always reopen again, you have to, you know, fight around it and stuff. But if you're sieging a system, maybe you can cut off one of the avenues that people were trying to get into and really, you know, make it hard for them to defend, like things like that. But obviously it would be quite expensive to do so.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably endless possibilities when it comes to this kind of stuff, like giving extra roles to, but I think what they have to keep in mind too is keep it simple enough for people to understand the full picture. Because if you go overboard with it and you have like a rear guard system and then you have a blockaded system and you have a ultra highway system where you travel through quicker or whatever you know you come up with, then people are going to be like, what is going on? I don't know, like what? And I think one of the big points they had too was like the factions give them give Faction Warfare players objectives, right? And it should be more clear what these objectives are, so people know what the goal is, really, right? What they're aiming for.
In the context of, in the subject of Sino jamming, there's a couple points to be made. Like, for one, in most like plex fighting capital ships, they can participate in open complexes as things stand now, but a lot of the complexes are gated and only allow certain ship sizes, all of them besides the open, in fact. So the main place where capital ships can come in like a system control struggle, not talking about objective based stuff like citadels and all that, but like is on the iHub when you're trying to actually flip the system. Something that most people have done at one point or another is during off hours, you get a system to vulnerable, and then during off hours, you drop 6 dreads on it and flip it in one cycle, right? And then just get out of dodge, like in the middle of like AU time zone. That would make something like that harder. For the defending players, that feels bad, because we fought all day, we pushed them off the IHOB in our subs, and then in the middle of the night they dropped 6 dreads and did it one cycle, right? But
yeah,
at the same time, that is still risking 6 dreads, which is not nothing. That's, in the context of a faction warfare,
that's usually the number one argument, right? For or against citadel damage cap, right? And now we have citadel damage cap removed on
shields,
which technically should bring back the whole POS headshotting with like 50 dreads, drop them on a POS, get it reffed in 5 minutes, and then get the dreads out. But it doesn't really, because the, you know, it's too easy to lose those dreads on citadel. So I don't think that you know, that's what's gonna happen. Yeah, I guess it opens up the possibilities, at least, and that's always a good thing, I think. But yeah, like I said, they shouldn't be going too crazy with it either, right? So like, what was the point now with or what was the take on like Sino jammed? Do you guys both agree though, right? It should be Sino jammed in the frontline and the other systems, like right next to him.
I'm
not sure.
I think I would like to see some Sino jamming effects, whether or not it's the frontline system. It might even be more interesting to have it the system behind the frontline than the frontline itself. There's room to explore. I mean, we've got Sino jam randomly in systems now with incursions. They could roll through Sino jam a bunch of systems and then roll on again. So it's not as if it's a new mechanic that doesn't already affect these areas of space anyway. It's just now controlled. Maybe the Sino jam only takes place for a certain window, like the faction is able to set this window, like between like 8-hour window that they say this is when we want to defend.
But who sets the timer? Like, who's like, you
know? I don't know. I don't have answers to that questions.
That's I think that's pretty much impossible, because like
I do think what you just said, Sino.
Sorry, your mic is breaking up.
Sorry, hello?
Yeah.
I do think what Ithaca just said about Sino jamming in the command operation, but not the front line, is really interesting. Because the command operation, like my gut instinct as to how it was presented in FanFest was that they expect the command operation systems to be where the two sides would stage. So like Sino jammers in the staging and then like just chaos in the front line sounds kind of on brand, right?
That kind of sounds like more annoyance than anything, because like if you stage somewhere and you can't jump into the system with a sound, like that's pretty annoying. But if you can jump to the front line, I mean, that to me personally, that doesn't make too much sense. But
I mean, if there's like NPC stations, it's easier to stage caps like on just to be sitting there, and then you'll have like a defender's advantage sort of.
You know what?
It'll be harder to move during the attack.
Another random thing too that they should be considering that I'm just going to throw in here because it just crossed my mind is the whole market text thing, right? So if the command operation systems are supposed to be the staging ones, then that would mean they would move, right? Back and forth and here and there. And then
they would move with the front lines.
Yeah.
Because
so the front line moves and then the command operations would move with them.
Yeah.
So you would have to move staging and then seeding stuff for your faction, right? That's one part of like big wars is like the industrial part of like having ships, having mods, having all kinds of shit there. Like reseeding it every week or every couple of days.
That's already par for the course though, because when you set a target and you're trying to siege it, you need your ships to be closer, and you're constantly picking new targets after you win or lose an attempt at one. So like a lot of people will have like a main staging and then like siege ships for like a siege. So like if I live in Setogas and I want to siege Arzad, I'd move ships down to like, if I can, Arzad itself, but if not,
yeah, you would stage with a handful of things.
Right. And that's kind of how I expect it to still be, right?
But wouldn't it be good to have the a proper seeded front line, like or operations base or whatever, like some market guys that you know support their faction that way, and then you know you might just gain some points, whatever LP or whatever it is.
I mean, if you do that, like I understand where you're coming from, but if you do that, then you reduce the mobility of the war zone. The whole point is it should be able to like fluctuate.
No, my point is to keep it mobile, because you would.
If you have like one area that they're seeding ships in, like you're saying, hey, seed all the ships here, but then the front line pushes really far away again.
No, my point was, so usually you wouldn't do that because of the market tax, right? That's why I said the market tax. If you seed like, let's say, a billion worth of shit right now, and then tomorrow you move and you want to take it off the market and move it to the next, you have to pay that again. So maybe if you're in Faction Warfare and it's in your control, maybe you shouldn't be paying that tax then. So that enables people to do this and move with the front line and then get rewarded for it by the...
Someone brought this up during... I can't remember who, but someone brought this up during the CSM campaign about essentially just this. Like when you're in Faction Warfare, like a reduced market transaction fees and things for doing that, for listing things as an option. Will there be a big uptick on that? Like, I don't know, because you'd need to have like third party people, because every alliance that takes part in Faction Warfare will have their own logistics that's doing it, and they're probably putting stuff up on contracts, seeding markets. For them, it probably doesn't make as much of a difference. But if the system is congruent to third parties who make a living by just going in and seeding Faction Warfare markets, that would potentially be quite an interesting like second level effect.
Yeah, and someone says they should pay the tax because it is the cost of war. Well, I mean, I'm not saying necessarily it has to be zero tax, but it has to be low enough for them to consider seeding stuff, you know?
Sorry, I had to go AFK for a second. Hello.
What happened?
Hello. We discovered you were gone.
Yeah. I was like, I was like preparing you, like laying it all out for Hyde to come in and like maybe poke holes into this and think of like how would a big low sec group exploit the whole faction warfare thing? Silence. No high.
At least when I played Faction Warfare, which is, I mean, from my understanding, the mechanics of Faction Warfare haven't changed from when I played, but I played it well, I played in a very, very small low set group, and then I played in Faction Warfare. So, but it's pretty much the same thing in terms of PvP. It was more of kind of like a, you could use it easy to learn and go up the steps. Like, it shouldn't be something that large groups should exploit. And it wasn't back then, because the meta was also a lot easier. There was no tech 3 destroyers, which completely ruined it. And, you know, command destroyers became a thing, and so did the ADCs on assault frigates, really shook everything up. And CCP took far too long to respond to things. For example, you could take a tech 3 destroyer into smalls for like a very, very long time. And I think that kind of started to fizzle. Yeah, it started to fizzle. Things started to fizzle out from them, because also a lot of the big content creators, and that also massively impacts things when the people who are doing things kind of start to become disinterested in the game or kind of have to move on with life, and nobody fills those shoes, then you'll see all the groups kind of dissipate. And that's kind of what happened to Galente Militia. And then Caldari Militia became more USDZ focused, because when I played, there was a guy, for example, Mirror Divorcia, who used to form massive, you know, fleet people who had weight behind the name, and that's when the militias were quite large, but the meta was also a lot different. You could kind of go out in cruiser fleets and everything would be fine in plexes and stuff, and kind of things just fizzled out as things moved on. So,
well, I mean, one of the reasons that people went out in cruisers, and when it started to escalate into bigger things, it didn't happen as much, is because you would get dropped on by groups like Snuffed Out, Project Mayhem, Shadow Cartel,
Pandemic Legion
back then. Even Adversity were doing it as well. So you had all these groups that were essentially feeding off of the ecosystem, and they were there for content, and that's fine. But that had this constraining effect on the faction warfare meta, because the faction warfare groups didn't have as much money to, you know, throw around big capital fleets. So when they did put dreads on the field, it was, you know, big moments. Now, because there's no kind of real oppressive presence all over the place, then there's nothing to stop people just like escalating super high. So that might be good, and that might bring back some more sort of other groups that live nearby to engaging with faction warfare fleets once again. I'm actually for that. Like, I'm not saying it like, hey, Snuffed Out, you ruined faction warfare. I'm actually saying it was a cool part of it.
Yeah, so, I mean, if things are controlled in a way where thing is it has to be careful where you don't, things will always be exploitable, and CCP has to be careful with what they do, because they can easily make it in ways that groups always have a significant advantage and stuff like that, which is why I'm still skeptical of how they're going to do things, because it's hard to design game mechanics, especially if you don't have enough kind of oversight or knowledge about what would be beneficial. But I agree that it shouldn't be something where you can kind of get shit on massively by other groups. But so, again, we'll see.
Like, what you missed, and I really wanted to have your take on, was the whole should the frontline and the systems behind that be Sino-gemmed? And I mean, in my opinion, I think they should be, but Ithaca and Asia were a little bit like, you know?
The thing about faction warfare spaces, it spans such a vast amount of space, as long as it depends on how they did it. Like, if there were like a bit, I don't know how they're going to do it, but if there was like a billion frontline systems, and then it kind of fucked with how you can move around space with normal capitals, that would be kind of strange. What? Like, if it was like incursions, where it doesn't really make that much of an impact, that's kind of different, right? It depends on how vast the scale is. It would be kind of awkward if like a billion systems were just Sino-gemmed, because at the end of the day, caps in actual plexes haven't played a massive thing. And Ithaca's right in that most faction warfare, kind of when you bash an iHub, caps haven't been thrown around for a long, long time. Ever since, I think it was years and years ago,
like half time zones to flip it in one cycle.
Yeah, like very carefully. And it's been years since, like, there were, when I was quite junior in the game, Galente Militia, for example, was a decent powerhouse and could front enough caps to fight Snuff on a certain level, for example, and overload everything. Those smaller groups, obviously PL would shit on you if they wanted to, but there was a time where that was a bit more balanced. But obviously it's not as balanced right now, so people don't throw around caps as much. But that also doesn't massively impact faction warfare in the same way, because it's really, you would only really use this for, you know, iHub bashing. That's never been
so, yeah. I mean, I was in Galmill around that time, and I remember we would have battleship fleets were pretty common. We had some APOC fleets, we had some Tempest fleets and things like that. And you would have like over 100 people in fleet with like triage carrier support and maybe some dreads as well. So those were big fleets, and they were part of the organized Gal Mill, which was a whole bunch of alliances all kind of coordinating and working together. And they, we would go in and we would fight the Kaldari, and they were just as organized. So sometimes you'd have these huge fights with, you know, 300-400 people in systems, all for faction warfare. And I can't remember the last time we've seen some, and that was semi-regular. Like, I'm not, there are a couple of things every so often where there's a big thing, someone drops a cap, people pile in, and then suddenly there's a huge fight. But
I think you guys are misunderstanding when I say Sino Jump. I'm not even thinking about caps too so much, but more of like subcap projection too, right? With like, especially, I mean, now the battleship buff, and then in low sec, where obviously, you know, the more, I mean,
but again,
it's not like
you can Sino into exactly a plex, because it's dead space. You can't Sino into a plex, right?
It's like dropping
on the outside of a plex.
Well, but the fight might just take place on a gate, of course.
It's not very often that would be mirroring incursions in those, like Pando, where you effectively are not going to catch anybody unless you set up to tackle once they warp, you know, to another site. Be a lot of effort, and at least with Santa crabs, they fly very blingy, expensive ships. Whereas faction warfare has never been geared towards
There can be some fights on a gate, but like the majority are going to take place in the plexes as they're trying to flip the system, because those are the objectives that raise the bar.
Yeah.
All right. Well, my perspective was just changed, I guess.
It's think of it like an ESS site, Pando. Effectively, you know, it's sort of similar.
You just call me fans.
Sorry.
Oh, God, so right in the future.
Not many people who start with P, okay, that I speak to.
I did put on stream, though, what they had on a slide on FanFest, which was like, so how many systems are going to be front lines, and then command operation systems, which are the ones that are right next to front lines, right? So just to give you an idea, like, what would be Sino-gemmed if, like, people, if they would go forward with it. But then if you guys say most of the fights between faction warfare groups would be inside plexus, and then it wouldn't be worth setting up for big groups or like snuff and so on that are not in faction warfare to even look at this, you know, that's a different story.
I mean, the pirates can go into the plexus and shoot you with subcaps, but like they will be under the same restrictions you are. Like if you're in a medium, they can't bring a fax. They have to bring T2 cruisers and below, for example.
Yeah. Nobody would ever take T2 cruisers into, because nobody would fight you. You can literally just walk up and see what's landing on the gate, and you're like, no, I'm not going
to
fight.
And you don't have an incentive. You
see it coming a mile away, and so, they have to go through a gate.
So Sino jamming those systems is not necessary, is what everyone is saying.
It wouldn't massively impact things unless CCP decides to make these silly like capital sites or something like that, which would just be kind of strange if they were wanted to go down that route. So no, I don't think so.
All right. So then another thing, right? So what they said, and I'm going to put the front lines thing back on here. Another thing they said, and I touched on that earlier, was that the frontline systems are going to have more rewards and stuff. So the thought I had then was, wouldn't then the defending side, let's say the blue side in this screen, in this screenshot, wouldn't they have an incentive to let the enemy push their high payout systems, the frontline system, closer to their high sec? Wouldn't you have an incentive?
Why do they want it closer to their high sec?
It's easier to access, right? I mean, and it's further from
hostile staging. But if they don't live in high sec, it might not be easier for them to access. And hostile staging can be anywhere in the war zone. Like the biggest Amar Mil Alliance localist primary lives in Asset, which is in Metropolis, which is stereotypically a Minmatar region, right? Like.
But couldn't that, wait a second, but couldn't that change because they talked about structures and structure, especially citadels being weird and that, you know, factions could still stage in hostile space and stuff like this. So people would be more like on the cautious side, more likely on the cautious side than and say, like, hey, I'm staging in HiSec. I can't lose my shit here.
Nobody's
and...
going to stage in HiSec. Well,
you can say that with stations, Pando. You know, at the end of the day, LoSec is still very accessible, and there are stations, you know, very... You know, it's not like NullSec where you have to have citadels because they got rid of, you know, outposts or NPC space. You know, NPC stations are kind of everywhere. It's not... Accessibility isn't a big thing. The reason that they want to do that is because what would happen is when citadels came out, it really impacted... kind of flipping a system, because you could just put a citadel in system and then fill it with ships and then just kind of spam out a load of ships, whereas, you know, there wasn't the same as it used to be in faction warfare. You couldn't do that. You can just anchor lots of citadels and spam out ships all the time.
Yeah, you suddenly couldn't really lose your staging, basically, because even if you did lose your staging citadel, then everything was asset safetied. Whereas if you were pushing a war zone quite far and you moved your staging forward into some system and then the enemies turned and then really pushed you back and took that system, then suddenly you lost access to all of your stuff. It was completely locked out. And that could be, that could have like a snowball effect. Suddenly you're like, crap, we need to fall right back because we've all of our assets are stuck in here. Like, that was good. That was interesting gameplay. It has this asymmetric kind of feel to it. And I think there's been this... move for a long time to try and like make everything must be exactly balanced, but it doesn't have to be. Asymmetric warfare is fun, and it is much more interesting in terms of how it can engage with each other. So having one side have an advantage, one side having a disadvantage, as long as it flips around and things like that, is not a problem.
I agree with that. I do think it is of note that even though like assets got locked out, almost everybody got the ability to get it with alts. So. Like, it's been true. Annoying at best, honestly.
All right. True. I mean, I don't know how you solve that, though, because the thing is, almost any mechanic really can be solved by alts in some way or another. If you're locked out of something because of standings or because you're not in the right group or whatever, alts are always going to be a solution, and it's kind of, I guess it's hard to design around
the most powerful thing in EVE. That is not a problem that can be fixed really in the style the game is, I think.
All right. So
I have my 5 accounts.
I mean, it's kind of true, right? I mean, I've got like, I don't know how many alts. I guess I've got like 30 accounts plus, you know, all this chars on there. Just like Alpha Toons might just do for a lot of those drops, right? It's like a lot of people make alts for all kinds of drops. Another thing they talked about was storylines within Faction Warfare then spilling over to NullSec and other areas of space that is not necessarily Faction Warfare. What did you guys think about that?
All for it. I think it's going to be interesting if that happens. I especially want them to just YOLO it in and see if it works, and then if it ends up being something that nobody likes and it's not engaging and no one plays,
they remove
it,
they never they remove just anything,
go fine and they take it away. But maybe they never should. That's remove something anything. They should do.
We're in the start of a couple story pieces right now. You guys have been paying the attention arts. To
yeah.
In the Caldarian Galente war zone, this is called Athanon.
That's how you pronounce it, Athanon, right?
I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right.
It's Athanon? Yeah.
It is a word. I call it Athanon.
Yeah, but, that's what he
and
said.
Then in Amar HiSec, in the system of Arshat, there are disagreements that are causing friction in the Concord assembly. And what friction in the Concord assembly is obviously pointing to is that there's going to be changes in the Concord Militia War Powers Act, basically the rules that govern the limited war of faction warfare. So, like, all this friction that's happening is clearly pushing towards a lore reason for the rules of faction warfare to change.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what they have in mind with the, what they, I think at least, what they said with the spillover from faction warfare into NullSec, for example. It's more like a tool to, you know, have the fitting lore for certain changes they're doing, right?
Yeah, it's going to be like a delivery, like the same way when we got the Sweeple and the Confessor and the Jackal and the Kade. That was like an event where like you were supporting nations and it determined like the order we got them in. We're going to see a lot of events like that, I think.
So if you guys are not too concerned about it being Sino-gemmed or not, And the station citadel situation seems to be not too much of a concern. Like, do you guys have something that you really want CCP to like pay attention to? That you're like, holy shit, like, make sure you get this right. Like, what are your concerns?
Risk versus reward in some ways. They'd have to, I think the current system doesn't attract enough people because of how if you do the proper missions, then it's a decent amount of money, but it's based off of LP, and LP goes up and down depending on whichever faction's winning and, you know, the tiers and stuff. So that's something. I mean, there's not the incentive right now as much as there used to be. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Arcia.
No, you're right. Like, the missions are the big moneymaker, and they don't interact with the PvP ecosystem, like I said. So, like, it encourages a lot of people to just join to manipulate the Warzone tiers, the LP values, and run missions all day, not really interacting with anybody.
So what that reminds me of is them saying they learned a lot of lessons, or like they learned some lessons from Potvin, right? Well, and
I think a lot of that comes from the fact that the story was written before it was even put in front of the players. So you had this whole, oh, you can fight for Edencom, you can fight for the Triglavians. Who will win? We'll never know. Turns out we did know because they wrote it in advance. So it was an illusion of choice. And then once people realized that it made no difference if you fought for Edencom, you could have got half the game to come in and fight for Edencom and just try and push it through, and they would still have lost and Potvin still would have happened. I think that's what they're talking about when they're like, we learned a bit about that, because so, there was no real choice there.
I thought they were talking about the way the Potvin plexus work in terms of the limitation and stuff. Like, I thought that's particular what they meant. I didn't even think about like the whole story.
I think it was the way they introduced it is what they were talking about.
I think it's both, but I think especially the way they introduced it, because the invasion was a storyline arc where you had two sides fighting against each other, determined mostly by the players of who wins what system. But at the end of the storyline, when the objective was reached, Edencom won 50-something major systems and 80-something minor systems versus the 27 major systems and 28 major systems of the Triglavians, and only the Triglavians got rewards. And they weren't particularly amazing rewards, but Edencom got nothing. Like, they learned something. Like,
thanks for playing.
They wrote a story. They wrote a cool story. They wrote a story that they wanted to share. They wrote a story with two sides, and then they only gave something to one of the sides.
They basically restricted emergent gameplay, because for years and years and years, players have been doing things that CCP don't expect. Like, go back to Hilmar's presentation at the 10-year fan fest, and he's talking about how he joined a bunch of players who were mining, and noticed that they were jet canning and then going back to the station, and he was like, oh my god, they're so much more efficient. Broke the game. Like, this is chaos. How do we fix this? And they were, oh, actually, we don't have to fix it. That's just, you know, players being genius. But with this one, what they did was said, there's multiple options. You can do whatever you want, when in fact that was not true. And that's the issue a lot of people took with it. It's like, you're saying people, hey, there's two options here. Why are you surprised when some people went with the other one, not the one that you've decided is the winner?
To be fair, though, players did have an impact on what systems would flip, right? I remember us having a discussion in it, like, should we make sure an Iridia system flips that's close to our space? Would that be beneficial to us? And so, nobody really knew, so we decided to, like, nope, we don't want that here, so we left it up. But, like, it could have, you know, well been something, like, in range to all of Fountain, which, you know.
So, what they expected was a small group of Triglavians going around trying to flip systems, where just the locals who lived in it defended. They gauge their activity numbers, like what they expected, based on chapters 1 and 2. But chapter 1 and 2 didn't have permanent consequences. So chapter 3 had much, much more engagement. And the Edencom,
it was too
guys,
successful.
They kind of forgot that role players who are loyal to the empires existed and formed the backbone of Edencom. And as Edencom went around defending systems, it did pick up the local defenders, and a lot of the local defenders kept going to the next system and the next system and the next system. And that's a lot of how it grew. Even people who started as locals didn't just say, oh, my system's done, I'm done with this. They went along for the ride and decided to participate in the new story on the same side they had started on. And what we ended up with was a really big Triglavian side and a really big Edencom side. And the ending kind of failed both of us to some degree.
So, like, I guess it was too successful, like more successful than I thought, because like so many people like were actually taking part in this.
I think what they learned is they're going to have these objectives that the empires give the players to do. And at the end of the objective, there's going to be a clear winner and a clear loser, like they said at FanFest. But there's going to be rewards for both sides. The winner gets more, but rewards for both sides that will reward loyalty over time, as opposed to encouraging flip-flopping back and forth.
But so when I hear that, like I actually re-listened to the loyalty over time reward kind of thing, that I don't know, if I would then start doing this and I earn way less or whatever, like, you know, I just joined from, like, I'm just in Faction Warfare for a week and I get less rewards and stuff, man, I don't know if that would feel good either, right? Like, I'm not sure how you would balance that, to be honest.
A big thing they have to learn from as well, from Citadels, is that if people have put in a lot of time for very little reward, keeping in mind that ISK has a lot less purchase power than it once did and they haven't really scaled anything up to match that, and people aren't going to do it. I think EVE massively has an aging population because we don't see much, you know, input of newer players and people. I think MMOs just appeal to a bit of the older generation, and as we all get older, we all have generally less time, and we don't want to just be wasting our time effectively. So I think, kind of going along the lines you're saying, it kind of has to feel like it means something, or kind of you get some good fights. So they have to be careful in that regard.
I think that's the number one thing in all of EVE. Talk about Nullsec, NPC, or like a PvE, PvP, anything. It always has to be worth your time, right? I mean, that's a very big fucking thing. Like, the number one thing, to be honest.
Like, nothing right now is worth your time, apart from Potron. I think Potron makes very good money.
I mean, I would argue that's where skill comes in, skill and experience. Like, for example, in Snuff, there's a reason people want to join Snuff. There's a reason why Snuff is active. Because you guys know, well, I mean, I know, but like when you guys ping and you do shit, everyone knows, okay, it's going to be worth my time. Like on average, not every open is a success. We all know this, it's EVE, but on average, right? Like, so.
But that's because when people get to this level, it generally is very old, you know, members, and that is kind of our style. We value everyone's time, so we don't want to do too many things that are just going to, you know, waste people's time, because
it's weekend retirement home events.
Exactly. you get to a level where you don't have the time to put into stuff. I mean, that's the thing about EVE, is that you used to have this very slow progression. Like, I was effectively a low sec journeyman. I kind of went up all the stages through different size alliances and I got to the top, but that was a very slow progression. And when I got to the top, it was very controlled in that there was no massive super and titan spam. There were no whore guns. Dreads were still very expensive. Triage, you kind of had to still refit, and they weren't tanky at all. Everything mattered a lot more, and everything cost a lot more, and you would still have to be very careful with what you're doing, and people would still come shit on you, because at the end of the day, there was a lot more people playing as well. But skill injectors, raw calls, everything, kind of everyone had a massive arms war, including us and Shadow Cartel. Everyone just got to this level, and now everything's kind of just sitting where nothing is worth anyone's time, realistically. Like, let's take this, you know, this border war between Goons and PanFam. It's just effectively almost arranged fights to keep people going for the summer, is how I see it, because PanFam knows they're never going to be able to push Imperium, and Imperium probably doesn't give a fuck that much, honestly. They know that how they're embedded in Delve, nobody's going to be able to push them out without the effort and nobody wants to put in that much effort. So just how the game is.
Well, you just broke up, I think, but yeah, I think it's easy to see it like that, but I think there's still plenty of stuff that's worth people's time. It's just like so much harder to you know, get to that spot where you can find it, and especially for new players, I think that's the struggle too. They don't have that experience that you need to then, you know, be efficient with your time and get the fun out of this game quick enough. You know, they're gonna roam around Nullsec aimlessly and they're like, what are we doing here, like it's all empty and stuff. So I think especially for new players, it's very hard to, you know, be time efficient, I guess. Sorry, Asya, you wanted to say something? It seemed like...
Perhaps at some point, but I don't know at the moment. I was going to say, as far as like stuff being worth your time and making money, I do hope that they do move away from like the mission being the ultimate LP earner model and A, reward more for plex fighting, and B, you can really expand on the concept of the frontline fight, the battleground sites, and like PvEVP kind of stuff, like flashpoints and Podgefen. I think that is really the way forward. Big earning stuff that encourages people to come in guns blazing, like. Because let's be honest, like the ships you run the sites with is never going to be determined by the rats in the site. Like you can run a Podgefen flashpoint with T1 battle cruisers if nobody can test you, right? But you ship up because other people are going to come shoot you. And I expect the battleground sites to be kind of the same way.
And because you want the reward. Like if the reward is worth it, nobody's ever going to care. It's very critical. Citadels is the same thing.
Yeah. There's also opportunity outside of faction warfare to use the Edencom flashpoints in Lusak, I think. The same way the flashpoints in Podgefen are used, the Triglavian side ones.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what they do. I mean, I think they have so much flexibility with what they can do with faction warfare, because I think at this point everyone's waiting for just anything. So, you know, I think people will be happy with whatever they do, and I'm just worried they will screw it up. They'll either make something super overpowered and then nerf it to shit, or just do something really bad and then sit on it for 2 years.
Yeah.
It's hard to get it right.
Yeah,
I hope they're more responsive. Like as part of this new kind of way of doing things, I hope they've built the system with the levers. Because what they used to do for sure is build the system that they designed on paper, with a little bit of tweaking here and there, but it was pretty much hard-coded into the game. Then the way their dev teams were set up, they would basically finish a project and then be moved on to a different project. So then when the system inevitably needed to be fixed, changed, updated, whatever, they couldn't do it because they were busy working on something else, so it had to wait to go into the pipeline.
Well, the devs weren't at CCP anymore by that time, right?
Yeah.
Walmart's a good example.
For sure now, they're building things with the levers so that they can... update things and change things without having to, for example, push an entire change to Tranquility, because that's what they used to have to do a lot. And one of the good examples where I know this is the case is the tournament tool for Alliance Tournament. So a lot of the things, the rule sets were all hard-coded in. So if, for example, you wanted to change the point value of one ship by 1 point, you needed to make that change in the code. Then it had to go through the entire QA loop because it was a new build of Tranquility. Then that had to get pushed to everyone, and they had to do an update at downtime of the whole server to change 1 point. Now what they've done is made it so that it takes in like XML files, and they can basically just load in rule sets outside the game itself. And I know that they're doing more like that, where there's dials to change without recompiling all of EVE Online, basically. And that means that they can iterate faster with tweaks, basically, what I'm saying.
I would have thought they would have figured it out a little earlier. But
you would have thought that, but...
I feel like everything has to be set up that way now.
I mean, there's the classic point at pause code type thing.
Well, all the stations go invisible.
Yeah, to see how bad things were in ye olden days, because they just, it was monolithic and they just wrote the whole thing in one go, basically, and then just hacked things into it. Whereas now they're like making systems and systems and systems, which is, that takes a long time with a project this big, while trying not to break it and also put new features in. So they've done a lot of work over the last 3 or 4 years, like refactoring EVE Online and like teasing certain things out of the monolithic code block, which is allowing them to do these things like these arcs, like these like crazy mechanics like Poshvin and stuff like that. They wouldn't have been possible 5, 6, 7 years ago.
I think the postcode created the universe, like the physical one.
Yeah, you might be right.
Yeah,
you might be right. Carvus, shout out to Carvus, who actually was doing Faction Warfare stuff earlier. Thanks for the host. And Mac Barback saying this FC chat should have been one with 4 soon-to-be CSM members. Yeah, that would have been nice to have Ithaca and High on too. For good reason. I think you can tell why. I think especially High, people have that misconception of being very like big group, like stomp the little guy kind of, like, no. Like, he wants to have some fun in the game, and he's okay with you having fun too. As long as you're not having more fun, all right?
We beat Shadow Cartel. We don't need our Titans to Super Saiyan War. That's the only reason we had them. We did it, and then, yeah.
You can trash them all now. Yeah. You can just give them to me. I'll open a Citadel, like a sanctuary for abandoned snuff super caps.
If CCP was to make something where you could actually have decent fights and... Yeah. I could take snuff in like our Augustus or something like that. Ships where, you know, the game has kind of developed more where it's just kind of N+1. But, and if you could kind of use niche techniques in like smaller fleets, that would be kind of cool. I think even snuff has become kind of shit and lazy. So I'm all for things which encourage smaller scale, more skill based things where you can't just blob. So
Parchment seems to be doing that all right. Like, you know, that's why I thought that's what they meant with, like, we learned lessons from Parchment. So I hope they really study that and then apply the good stuff to Faction Warfare. What else, like, I'd say that's probably the last question I want to ask you guys. Like, what else would you like to see them add and pay attention? I kind of asked a similar question earlier, but... like, is there a specific mechanic you want to see? Like, for example, the Potter and the Limited, the Flashpoint kind of mechanics? Or is the, like, do you trust CCP Aurora and her team?
I mean, I think I said it earlier, I would like to see something that makes the geography of the war zone be in flux. Not just the fact that this system is owned by this team and this system is owned by this team and who cares, but gates being shut down or maybe temporary, like you think like World War II beaching craft going up on like Omaha Beach, for example, something like that that like can ping your fleet across like a temporary gate structure, kind of like an Anciblex, but run by the factions themselves. Things like that just change the geography and make it, it's not just the same loop that you're fighting every time. Like, oh, look, it's this system again. You know, it's like, hey, maybe we can block off this one and go this way. Or, oh my God, there's a new temporary jump gate between this system and this system. We can go around behind them. You know, stuff like that that changes the geography on a semi-regular temporary basis.
Yeah, or just anything that will get influx of players. And if CCP does good changes, you know, I'll make sure that our guys aren't fucking oppressive, and I will promise to clear all structures from Tama, including snuff ones, so people have a lot harder time gate camping, because I fucking hate camping. Anyways, that's a separate conversation, but yeah, I have a lot of faith in Asia to get things done.
In Asia.
Rip Space Detroit.
Yeah, if I can get Space Detroit unanchored, I can ask them to unanchor it. Well, I'll just die if they don't, so.
All right, Asia, maybe last words from you, like something you might want to say.
I will say the same thing that were my last words on Talking in Stations earlier today. Everybody interested in upcoming changes should probably keep their eye on the world news. All of the world news.
I don't CSM leaks. Wait a second.
No, the world. I'm just saying, these are not CSM leaks. These are my RP nerd leaks, and from my brain, I'm leaking my brain. The world news has had the conflict in Athanon and Arshat, and it's been talking about strife in the Concord Assembly. To me, this can only be a harbinger of changes to faction warfare and to how war between the empires is conducted. I think that going forward, the world news will be a good source of information for people who can parse and read through the lines about what is to come in the game, more so than it ever has been before. And it has been before in a lot of cases. But I think that if you are not paying attention to it, you should.
All right.
Do you think they're ever going to bring back those like huge faction titans that they had in like the way old game, like the really huge models?
What were they called again? Eggplans, all right.
Something like that.
I don't expect to see them in game, but yeah.
That's the one.
The empires have not only do they have these gigantic titans that are like many times bigger than like anything we have.
They're like absurdly bigger. Yeah. They're like a thousand times bigger than a Titan. It's like way beyond. I mean, Titans are already absolutely like absurd in a kind of a sci-fi thing anyway, but these like Laptane Titans were just way beyond absolute insanity. It was like the total mineral content of like a dozen planets to build on or something stupid like that. It'd be cool to see them kind of like appear for like an event and disappear again, but I don't know how they do it.
Yeah. Maybe you can just control them for a while, and then like people can just take over the super ultra titan, whatever.
Like, but then these titans are like, they shoot their doomsday and a planet's gone, right?
Might as well. Who knows? The possibilities are endless, right?
Yeah.
All right. I would say, we leave it at that, and we just call it. If you guys don't have any last words, Asya already got rid of us. I would say, guys, thanks for coming on. I think I learned a lot about faction warfare today, you know. I did have some experience, like I said earlier, but it's like old experience, right? So I wasn't quite up to date. And a lot of the I guess the Dino and concerns and stuff like this that I had might not be necessary, right? So hopefully CCP gets it right, and hopefully Asya especially gets like listened to on the CSM. I'll support you all the way. I'll be there. So hopefully we can help them make the best possible version of faction warfare for everyone, be it Snuff, be it Nullsec groups, be it the actual faction warfare guys that are right now fighting there and stuff like this. And yeah.
Panda.
Huh?
You know, Athanon, actually, the range of Athanon is like a lot of Cloud Ring, so maybe they'll go into Cloud Ring with faction warfare and then into Fountain, and then in it we'll have to do faction warfare. Wouldn't that be something?
That'll be something, that's for sure. Maybe Cloud Ring finally has a purpose then, other than the jump.
Duente gotta take over Cloud Ring.
Yeah.
Duente's pretty dead.
If you ask me, you can have it. You can have Cloud Ring, guys. There you go. But yeah. Guys, thanks for hanging out. Thanks for the guys on stream. I see you guys probably tomorrow. And Tuesday I've got something like a special little gang planned with my corp, actually, if the war doesn't get in the way. All right, can't promise anything. Wednesday, public fleet, if the war doesn't get in the way. And that's it. All right, see you guys around, and thanks again.
See you guys later.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.